You might have noticed that Pat and I are pretty fussy about our finances and our investments.
Yeah, a lot of junk doesn't make it past our bullshit detectors. But one thing that we've both used for many years is ShareSite. It records all dividends, franking credits, transactions, and performance easily in one place.
You can generate reports for income and capital gains, which makes tax time super easy. And ShareSite is completely free if you have 10 holdings or less.
So we've partnered with ShareSite to help support the podcast and provide all our listeners who upgrade to a paid plan a saving of 33% off the annual plan price. If you start with a free plan using our link, you'll still get that discount if you upgrade to a paid plan in the first 60 days.
Just head to ShareSite.com/fire and chill to get started.
Welcome to the Fire and Chill podcast, a collaboration between Dave from Strong Money Australia and Pat from Lifelong Shuffle, where we're going to have regular conversations about fire, investing, and living your best life.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Fire and Chill. Today we're going to discuss a topic that has strong ties and a lot of similarities with the fire movement, but despite that, it's not really spoken about all that much. And that topic is minimalism. I mean, you've probably heard about minimalism before, and today we'll break down exactly what it's all about, just to give you a refresher or to bring you up to speed if you're not super familiar with it. And we'll get into like the possible, the drawbacks maybe, and the benefits, of course. And we'll flesh out some examples of like what minimalism really looks like in practice, and then how it fits with our goal of financial independence and living an overall good life.
Yeah, I think when this topic was suggested by a listener, Dave and I kind of both looked at each other virtually and we're like, yeah, like we are both pretty strong fans of minimalism, even though we never say it and it's not something we think about a whole lot. And it's not definitely not something either Dave or I practice to an extreme extent to, you know, maybe one of those social media stars or one of those really famous minimalists. There's plenty out there. But I think in general, we're a fan of the concepts and we're a fan of, you know, what they can do for your life and trying to edge your life a little more toward minimalism and a little further away from rampant Western modern consumption will probably lead to a lot of benefits in your own life.
And it's quite interesting because even though this is the first time we're going to be speaking about minimalism, to our listeners, it'll probably feel like we've been speaking about it the whole time, don't you reckon?
It's a lot of the same details. It's a lot of the same concepts. Perhaps the goals are different, like the end states are probably a bit different, though they kind of both lead in the exact same direction. And even though you may not mean to become financially independent by being a minimalist, you may find yourself getting there if you are naturally minimalistic.
All right. So I suppose let's start with what is minimalism all about before we get into some other stuff.
Yeah, so this is going to sound very familiar to all our listeners because I think we say it quite often, but it's focusing on the most important, most critical things in life and minimizing the unnecessary excess.
So like the first bit here is interesting because some people might assume minimalism is like to, I don't know, cut life, everything in your life down to the bare bones minimum, I guess, because you would associate the word minimalism with like everything has to be as minimum as possible. But that's not really true at all. It's really about minimizing like the nonsense or like the useless stuff, I guess. So the stuff that's not really bringing you like all that much value.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
and focusing elsewhere.
It conjures up images of sitting cross-legged in the middle of an empty room. But I suppose we need to take this from the context of where we are. Like, again, these really rich, really abundant Western, you know, wealthy lives that we all live. Basically, we're already living on one very, very far end of the extreme, like the most extreme of the extreme end, really, if we think about it. And then so we have this whole concept called minimalism, which is about trying to drag back that end of the extreme back to something that's a bit more reasonable, a bit more in the center. And to us, extremely wealthy, extremely abundant, like our lives, which are extremely wealthy and extremely abundant, that is something that feels extreme and we have to give it a name called minimalism. But really, we're just trying to center our lives back to something that's a bit more reasonable.
Because I suppose it's like a human nature thing to kind of keep clawing towards the further and further and further away and further towards that extreme and see how kind of how far we can get in that direction, I guess.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely human nature, and modern society has basically shortwired our reward mechanisms to keep buying more and keep getting more and keep striving for more and keep getting that promotion and keep getting that bigger house and then fill that bigger house with more and more stuff. And yeah, it's all short-wired. It just keeps going around in circles.
Yeah. So I like to think of minimalism as kind of like the art of simplifying things, like simplifying your life and other stuff. And it's kind of like, so I think of it like the art of simplifying, but then also like the power of focusing, those two things combined. Cause I think it's like not just simplifying, it's more about focus as well, like what you're focusing on and why. So I like to think of it that way.
Yeah. So that is a really good way to put it. So really, when we're talking about minimalism, what we're trying to say is trying to break our attachment to our things. So we really often give possessions way too much meaning in our lives, and we spend a lot of money on our possessions, and we never really question the value that they're bringing into our lives.
We just kind of assume that they're good to have because?
Yeah, better is always better, right? Like yeah. More is always better. Like newer and
how couldn't more. It be? Yeah.
Well, yeah. But what we're really trying to say here is trying to be more thoughtful about everything in our lives, not removing things for the sake of it. But if we can simplify to free up time, free up space, free up money, free up energy, then surely that is a net positive. And then you can use that free space, free time, free money and enjoy it more fully, or something that aligns with how you'd like to enjoy it a bit more.
And so at this point, listeners are probably thinking, oh yeah, this sounds almost like what they've been saying from day one, you know? So there's so much overlap here. And Pat, you and I probably fair to say that we pretty much embrace most of the aspects of minimalism without really thinking about it at this point, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really kind of interesting because my partner told me a quote the other day, which kind of ties into this a bit.
Oh, I like quotes, mate. Give it to me.
Well, I'm not going to quote it perfectly because my memory is kind of rubbish, but I'll paraphrase it. And we will often say something along the lines of, oh, health is, you know, really important to me, or eating healthily is really important to me, you know, staying healthy. And yet, we'll often, like in the very next sentence when we're trying to explain ourselves, say something along the lines, oh, I just don't have enough time to cook a good meal, or I don't have enough time to, you know, go exercise, like my life is so busy. And it's like, well, what are your priorities? Why is your life so busy? And why is something that is apparently so important to you something you can't spend any money or time on? Surely if it's a priority, you'll find the space, the time and the money to do something that is so evidently a priority.
Yeah, the truth there is that you've got to watch what someone does more than what they say, because although they might say something and they might have good intentions in their mind when they're saying it, if their actions are the opposite, then internally it's probably not as important to them as they think it is, or as other things in their life are. So it's quite tricky. I like to watch what people do more than what they say. It's much more telling about what their priorities are.
Absolutely. And just sort of tying it back into this, like, if you can simplify your life and not focus your energy on the things that aren't important, you will or you might find time and space and money to do the things that you would like to be your priorities and that you'd like to spend more of those things on.
Yeah. So, all right, that kind of explains minimalism, but I suppose you were just pointing to it there, Pat, but let's run through some examples of what this might look like in practice. So how would you, it might sound good, but how would you actually embrace minimalism, or how would you try it out? Like what's some of the things that we might choose to do?
Ooh, the big one, the most obvious one is decluttering. get stuff out of your life.
What get stuff, mate? I love my stuff.
Well, how many pieces of clothing do you have?
Oh,
and how many of those haven't you worn in months or even years?
It gets interesting straight away because like even I don't have a lot of possessions, but I have like plenty of clothes and probably half of them I don't even wear. Like you just get into a routine of like wearing the same clothes like over and over again. It's just so weird because remember I said a while back on the podcast, someone like I had my, what was it? My annual spending or something. And we had like, I don't know, like $300-$400 for clothes. And they're like, oh, LOL, that's like nothing, you know? And we're like, we already have a bunch of clothes. How much more do we need? But even still, like, I don't even need the amount of clothes that I already have. So why would I need to go and buy even more again? It's just, it becomes quite funny straight away.
It is quite funny. And I think a great way of doing this is if you really feel like you need something new or you want to buy a new piece of clothing for whatever reason, like new fashion or new events that you want to go to, then like try and find another piece of clothing that you're going to throw away that would kind of take up the same spot in your mind or in your life.
Yeah, I really like that idea of trying to not increase the amount of things in your house. So if you're going to buy new stuff, which we all do from time to time, try and find something else that you don't use or don't really care about that much that you can donate or sell or throw away or whatever. And so then you don't have all this crap piling up in your house.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't just forever accumulate. And some of us live in our homes for a very long time, like 7, 10, 15 years. If you're constantly buying stuff and you're not getting rid of stuff along the way, then that's a long time to be accumulating stuff.
And it doesn't even have to be, like you said, constantly buying stuff, but it doesn't even have to be that often. Because like if you just bring one thing into your house every few weeks, which feels like nothing really, you know, after like 5 years, you've got like 60 new things in your house or something like that. It's just, it builds up so, so quickly.
Yep. And remember, you're not the only one that lives in your house, presumably. So if you're doing it, your partner's doing it, and then maybe some of your adult children are doing it too, all of a sudden, every 2 or 3 weeks, you've got like 3 or 4 new items coming into your house. And then that is like every year, what does that end up being? 200 new items or something. And then just balloons.
And that's where it gets tricky because then it becomes like, oh, there's so much of it. Where do I even start? And you just look at stuff. You might open a drawer and see it filled to the brim. You're like, oh, I don't even want to start here. Like, so that's why what we said before is a good idea. Like, if you bring one thing in, try and remove one thing at the same time. So you don't have that huge buildup and then that overwhelm later when you might want to tidy up and declutter and it just feels like too much work and too much hassle at that point.
Yeah.
And we're actually going through this at the moment. So we're moving house pretty soon. So we're starting to, I kind of wanted to get a head start and see what we could get rid of before we move. And there's just so much stuff that we don't even know where it came from or how we got it or like, what's it doing over there? I didn't even know we had that or, oh, I forgot we had this thing. We don't need that. We haven't used that for years or there's so many things, man. So if it can, like moving house can be a really good opportunity and a really good excuse to give yourself to kind of practice a bit of decluttering and a bit of a taste of minimalism because it, you know, when you've got less stuff to move, it's much easier to move. So you're really helping yourself.
Yeah. And I moved recently as well. And I moved from like a one bed apartment. Like you wouldn't think you could fit a lot of stuff in a one bed apartment, but let me tell you, you can. You can fit a lot of stuff. And moving was, admittedly, it's not as painful as moving a house, but like I definitely had more stuff than I thought I did, and I made more trips and the truck was fuller than I thought it would be.
That's interesting, even in such a small space.
Even in such a small space, and even from someone who's really experienced with moving, like,
yeah,
I've moved several times and I was a removalist at university who moves like lots of people, and I've helped friends move, and I even tell like myself and other people before moves, it's like everyone underestimates moving. Everyone. And even I, who knows that everyone underestimates moving, I underestimate moving every time.
And that's also coming from someone who's not a big consumer, who you wouldn't think would accumulate a lot of things to move.
Yeah, exactly.
I really shudder to think someone who lives in like a 4-bedroom house and they've lived there for 20 years and they've got kids and then they're trying to move house, how many things have accumulated and built up? That would be so monstrous, I think.
Yeah, it would be really, really daunting.
Yeah. Maybe that's why people stay in their houses for so long, because the thought of moving is just so off-putting.
Yep, I don't blame them.
All right, let's chat about some other examples of minimalism. One I can think of is it doesn't even have to be your possessions. It can also be things like, how about your bank accounts and your super accounts? You could, if you've got multiple of each, you can always streamline those into one or two if you've got a string of them, and maybe you've got some old savings accounts that you don't really use anymore. You can definitely close them down so you're not getting all these statements, or you don't need multiple, you don't need obviously multiple super funds. You can combine those into one and yeah, different things like that. So then you've got like less to manage and less to really kind of check and think about as well.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I hate having like too many online accounts and too many things to think about. So as far as possible, keep things in one place and close the rest. Just less mind baggage.
Yeah. It makes it more enjoyable, I reckon. When things are easier and there's less to kind of do and manage, it makes it more enjoyable. I find that anyway, definitely.
Agreed. Okay, so this one is going to be interesting. You could also practice minimalism by opting out of stuff that really isn't important to you where possible. So a meeting, not important to you. I'd say a lot of people would find lots of meetings not important to them, but they have to attend them anyway.
You can't do it in every case. Like, oh, no, sorry, boss, I'm not coming to this meeting. I'm not interested in that. I've got other things to do. Obviously, we're talking about like where possible, like, you know.
A party, you know. Probably a lot of parties we might go to that aren't really that important to us. So we can cut those out of our lives. Cutting out TV time. I mean, that's a pretty obvious and easy one. I don't think you'll find a lot of people that will argue that TV is a real valuable part of their routine.
Yeah. And it's not to say like any of these things are bad or that you shouldn't do them or you know, like you cut these things down to zero. It's like, if they're not super meaningful to you, you could use that time, like that valuable time elsewhere and get more kind of enjoyment from your life by really questioning how many and what type of activities you're doing and spending your time on. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. So another example where you can really practice minimalism in your life is the habit of questioning each purchase and what benefit it will really bring you. So this is one Dave and I kind of have said at least a few times on this podcast, and it's, I'm sure, a few times on our blogs as well. But when we make purchases, we try and only buy things that will fill a purpose or something that will bring value to our lives and that we will really need, and we don't already have something that fills that purpose. So, I mean, probably a good example of this is like a new mobile phone. Like, I'm looking at my mobile phone, it's getting on 3.5 years now, still takes good photos, still works as a phone, still has a pretty nice screen. I mean, have phones really come that far in the last 4 years?
Yeah, this one always kind of makes me chuckle a bit, because if you compare a phone, it's almost like that spectrum like you were discussing before of extremes, right? So you've got like the olden days where phones are like these big bricks, and then they moved on to like these semi-like nice kind of digital phones, and then you could play Snake and a couple of other games on your phone. It was good for phone calls and text message, and that's about it. And now we're on this other extreme where phones are like super, super powerful and super, super fancy, and we can do so many things on them. But the difference between a phone now and a phone like 3 years ago, almost no difference. Like when you look at the history, when you look at the history of phones over like 20 years or 30 years or whatever, like you're already 97% of the way there, maybe even further, like honestly. So what, you are getting like such a minuscule benefit to upgrading every year that like, is it really, really worth it? Like what, maybe every, what about every 2 years instead of every 1 year or every 3 years instead of two? Like this, yeah, doesn't have to be like all or nothing.
I'm aiming for a 4 or 5 year cycle. I think that's a pretty good cycle. Like there's a noticeable difference between a phone in five that's 5 years newer than an old one, you know? Yeah, like this is kind of like as we get richer and things get better and better, we start noticing and arguing over smaller and smaller and more minute differences between things. And like you said, if you look at it over the whole course of time, like
it's silly. It becomes silly. Like,
yeah. Yeah. We've got these supercomputers in our pockets and we're like, you know, the contrast on this photo is it's a little off compared to this phone. And, oh, this image is a little soft, you know, it's, and like they're zooming in 300 times into the pixels. So you can notice that little bit of softness on the camera. It's like, yeah, like these are improvements, but like we're really splitting hairs here, aren't we?
Yeah. It's that perspective again, that like I suppose it's that ability to zoom out just a little bit further than the last, you know, 6 months or something like that and see what you're really comparing.
And just so we're not talking about phones here, do we have any other examples of this sort of same thing where we need to question each purchase? And really why we're making the purchase?
Well, maybe clothes and cars. That's another thing that gets kind of purchased semi-regularly and upgraded when there may be not a whole lot of benefit to... Let's go with cars. It's a huge purchase. Like again, like a car every couple of years doesn't change dramatically to the car before.
No, definitely not.
And so what's the real benefit that it's going to give you that your current car doesn't have? Like it might have a few more features, a few extra niceties and all that, but after 6 months you're going to feel the same about that car as you probably do about your current car. And then you're going to be looking at your newer cars and be like, "Oh, look at that. Oh, I can't wait till that one comes out." So it's tricky.
Just so we can pass this one out, every time, literally every time I write about cars or talk about cars, I get someone coming in with ANCAP safety rating. Safety, man. I want the safest car possible for me and my family.
Becomes like they get on the moral high ground and then it becomes like if you're not buying the newest, best, safest car, and it has to be the newest because that's ultimately going to be the safest, then you're being reckless and endangering your family unnecessarily. I couldn't live with myself doing that. It becomes like that, you know? It becomes too extreme.
Yeah, it does become very extreme. And, you know, the safest way to not get in a car accident is to drive less.
Less driving.
Less driving.
No one wants to hear that, mate.
No one wants to hear that. No. If you're needing to work an extra year so you can afford that car, I would say overall, you're putting yourself in more danger at least.
With an extra 200 or 300 commutes.
With an extra, yeah, 200 or 300 commutes. Then if you just didn't buy the car.
I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, except maybe that argument breaks down a bit now because everyone's working from home.
True. So safety levels have gone up even if you've got a shitty old car.
Ah, they have. They have. You know what else, you know, will lead to a longer life? Walking.
Oh.
Yeah. Ooh. Never talk about that one.
Nah, it's just not popular, man.
Nah, it's not popular. We have way too much fun with this, Dave.
Yeah, I know. We've got a bit of other stuff to get through, maybe, but I have to keep moving. What we're really trying to say here is that we want to, I guess at the essence of it is we want to avoid the kind of destructive cycle of like buying shit and throwing it away all the time, you know, like this circle that goes around and around. You want to get out of that kind of mentality and that kind of habit of buying and consuming and throwing away. So like one way we can do that is you could even buy less things, but buy better quality things that will hopefully last longer and then you need less of them. And then you would probably enjoy them more because it is probably going to be better quality. So that might be like buying one t-shirt instead of three t-shirts, but you buy a better t-shirt that you're going to actually enjoy and actually wear for longer rather than the like cheap shit throwaway.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, we're not talking here about buying some piece of junk that's going to break in half and then you just get a new one, or we're not talking about, you know, fast fashion and buying the cheapest stuff. I like buying good quality stuff. I'm fortunate enough to be able to buy good quality stuff, and I think it's nice too. I'm sitting on an office chair here that costed several hundred dollars, but, you know, it's not
to brag, mate, not to brag.
Well,
throwing
you
that
know,
cash around.
If I'm working from home, and I've also got the sit-stand desk, but if I'm working from home, you know, I'm sitting on it every day. And
now I know why. You only did it because it's tax deductible, mate. You see? You and your tax kicks.
Maybe. I don't know. No. It will go on the tax return, but that wasn't the main driving force behind the purchase.
That's just a little extra comfort, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes it less painful. But, you know, if you buy a cheap chair, you might need to buy a new chair next year, and then you might need to buy a new chair in another 2 or 3 years. And it's like, well, just buy a nice one. It supports your back and it might last, you know, half a decade or longer.
Yeah. And if you appreciate the stuff that you have, if you've, you know, you bought better stuff and you take good care of it, then it should last even longer again, you know?
Yeah. And this still does apply to things that generally upgrade and cycle quickly, like phones. So buy yourself a phone or a nice phone and keep it for a while. It's still good in 1 or 2 years.
And get a phone cover.
Get a phone cover, yes.
It annoys me how many people don't have a phone cover and then they crack their phone and then they need a new phone. It's so far, man. It really shits me, hey.
Yeah,
but maybe it's on purpose. It's like subconsciously away. Oh, whoops. You know, oh, I need a new phone now.
Oh, well.
I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. We've fleshed out some examples, but why should we bother with these examples, mate? What's the benefits? What am I going to get out of it?
So, I mean, if you're buying less, then hopefully that means you are spending less money overall. Even if you're buying some high quality stuff, in the long run, that probably means you're spending less money overall, which is a big win. Put more of that money toward your freedom and toward other things that will bring joy to your life.
So obviously, if you've got less stuff, that also means that, you know, if you're owning less, that's less items and less kind of possessions that you need to maintain and replace over time. Because there's this funny tendency we have when something breaks that we have or it's not working anymore, we kind of automatically want to go and replace that thing without questioning how much do we actually use it? Like, is there another way we can like get the same thing with any of the other stuff we have, or do we really need that thing? Because maybe we don't.
Yeah, it's a good point. Maybe something breaks and you're like, oh, I probably don't need that anyway.
Yeah. So you've got less stuff in your house, obviously, to clean as well. And so you might even need a smaller living space. So you could probably, maybe you could move into a slightly smaller space, like maybe from a 3-bedroom to a 2-bedroom or something like that. Because a lot of us have, we've got extra furniture, we've got extra possessions, and we tend to use at least one room, maybe even 2 rooms for this extra stuff that we've got that we don't really use very often.
Yeah. And this is like a way bigger one. Like we need to spend at least a little time on this. This is way bigger than people realize. How many times do you hear someone say like, oh, I need a bigger place, or this place is too full, or, you know, I need to upgrade. Like, if that happens, then the first thing in your mind should be not that I definitely need a bigger space. It should be, do I have too much stuff? Do I really need a bigger space, or have me and my family just accumulated too much stuff that we don't use?
Because when you flesh that part of it out, I mean, sometimes it's because you start having, you know, multiple kids or whatever, like fair enough. But a lot of the times it's like humans don't take up all that much space, and we do need some things in our house, but we don't need a lot of things in our house. So a lot of the time when people think I need a bigger space, they're really thinking about their possessions more than themselves. Like I need a bigger space because of all this stuff, not necessarily because we functionally need that living space for ourselves to move around in.
Yep. So just a little note here. If you ever find yourself in a very small living space and you're thinking like, oh, I need an upgrade, just pause for a moment, look around and just be like, Is this just because I have too much stuff? Is this closet overflowing with stuff that I never use? And consider that first before thinking, well, let's just upgrade to a 2-story, 6-bedroom, 3-bathroom house.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What do they go for in Sydney? About 3.5?
Oh, 3.5, mate. You'll get like a 1-bed apartment for that in Sydney. And all of this also adds into the great benefit of there's just less to clean if you have less space. So that's something that's often ignored when making purchasing decisions about living spaces. It's like, how much cleaning is involved in this? So,
because everything collects dust and needs to be kind of, you know, cleaned and maintained and that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. One thing I like is with this, I mean, one of the best benefits in my mind is it kind of makes you like more flexible and more nimble because if you have less stuff, you're kind of lighter, you know, like it's easier to move places. You need less space for yourself in your life. You need less things. So you kind of become more, not more independent, but you kind of know where I'm getting with that.
Oh, yeah.
It's more easy to move. You've just got less kind of burdens and less things to carry. I find it kind of more freeing.
Yeah. When I was in my young 20s, I went to Europe backpacking, as many people do. And the second time I went, it was just with a carry-on for 2.5 months. Oh, yeah. It was so good. It's amazing how little you can get away with when you try. And it's now my favorite way to travel. I'm never very light. I'm never bringing a big suitcase full of stuff when I travel. It's always going to be a carry-on. So, and hopefully a backpack because I want to keep that young spirit in me.
What's the next benefit, mate?
So this really simplifies your life. It simplifies your living space, your financial accounts, your schedule. It really clears up more mental space, more peace of mind, more free time. I mean, if you live in quite a cluttered space, it could be kind of hard to explain this or kind of hard for us on this podcast to really express how much your space being like clean and free of clutter and free of too many possessions can really make you feel overall better and lighter. And just, again, back to that word, just more mental space and more peace of mind. So all of these things we have in our life that we own and maintain and manage, they just consume like these little bits of energy in our brain capacity and our time. And even when you're not actively touching them or dealing with them, they're always there and they're always in your eye line, or they always get in your way when you're trying to do something else. So yeah, I don't know if I can explain that any better, but
no, it's like that because I remember reading, it might have been some research that was done that found that when people are in spaces that are more cluttered versus less cluttered and simplified and kind of streamlined and minimalist style, the people who are in the space with more things around them had higher levels of kind of background anxiety than the other people in the kind of minimalist space with less stuff around. Like they were more calm than the people because it kind of visually affects you because it's kind of in your periphery, even if you're not looking at it, like it can stimulate your brain quite a lot. And if there's less stuff, it's simpler for your brain. It's kind of more aesthetically pleasing and calming.
Yep. Yep. It's like a bit of feng shui sort of stuff. I don't know what that is, by the way. So don't tell me I'm wrong. I know I'm wrong.
So the overall benefit probably like, we're trying to get to, I suppose, this area where you've got more time and energy and whatever for other things, with the end goal being that your life can become more meaningful because you're spending your time on things that are more important to you, and your money and your space and everything around you that is stuff that you really love, not just stuff that's there because you've got it, just because it's there. So as you focus on what matters most, and then kind of minimize or remove the other things that aren't that important. And if we're honest, maybe they're like really just distractions in our environment, then that can lead to you enjoying your life much more because you're able to, you have that capacity to really spend time and focus more on the things that really matter to you.
Yep. And another benefit is it's much better for the environment. Like the less material possessions that we're all buying and replacing all the time, the less space we're taking up. It's better. Less in landfill, less urban sprawl, all that sort of business.
This is a huge one because you mentioned before about fast fashion. And yeah, I remember reading some pretty depressing really stuff about fast fashion, like the resources consumed and the kind of mentioned earlier, buy cheap shit and throw it away kind of culture that's developed just because it is cheap and we don't really think or care too much about it. It's quite sad really how much waste has been created by a lot of cheap products. So yeah, this really ties into minimalism and the idea of buying less stuff. But not just less stuff, but the stuff that you do buy is really, you're going to keep it. You're going to use it for a long time. It's meaningful to you. It's not just like, oh, I'll just buy it because it's cheap. And then I'll just use it for a bit and then throw it away. So yeah, if you can get into the habit of breaking that cycle and questioning yourself, then it makes a big difference on the amount of waste you generate as a human and how much is getting thrown away and consumed and ending up in landfill. So it is definitely much better for the environment.
Yep. So we've talked about all of the great things about minimalism, Dave. Why don't we go through maybe some drawbacks or some challenges?
So the first obvious one is it can be hard to give up things, even things that we don't really like, even things that we don't really care about all that much. You know, it might be, I mentioned clothes earlier. So like for some reason, I have like all these clothes, right? Not a hoarder or whatever, but got a bunch of clothes that I don't wear all that much, but there's still like an internal reluctance to like give them away. Yep. Which is just, it's weird though, isn't it? Because it's psychological. You become kind of attached to your things and then you think, well, I will use it, but I'm just not using it right now. But that's, if you're honest with yourself, that's probably not true, you know?
Yeah, we definitely become attached, even if they don't provide us much value. So I don't know, maybe like we feel like we've put our time and our energy into this thing and now we're needing to throw that away.
Yeah, I have a theory of where this came from. Yeah, so I reckon it's like psychological embedded from our like caveman type days, right? So I reckon it came from, we used to kind of equate our personal wealth would be whatever possessions we had because, you know, we didn't have all the lifestyle and the digital wealth that we have today. So before it used to be possessions. So I think there's something in our brain that still thinks that lots of possessions equals good, like equals happy, equals wealth, equals abundance. That this type of, I think there's still a part of that mindset that's in us. Like, look at all the resources gathered. I'm a very clever caveman or cavewoman or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What do you think about that theory, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something in it. I think our brains aren't built for the level of abundance we have now, and it's easy to take it to an extreme. So I think that's happening for a lot of us. We have this kind of loss aversion bias. So even though we aren't really using something now, we don't want to throw it away because if we need it again in 2 years' time, it'll be like, oh, I wish I didn't throw that away.
Yeah.
So it's kind of this fear that we don't really want to lose things.
It's funny because if you, like, let's say you declutter your house and you give away 10 things, right? 2 years later, you'll need one of those things and you'll be like, oh, I shouldn't have got rid of that stuff. And you'll be like really annoyed at yourself, but you'll forget about the 9 things that you like completely didn't need at all. But your mind will just focus on the one that you did and be like, oh, this was a bad idea. I never should have done it.
Yeah. I wish I kept it. It's like you probably wouldn't have been able to find it if you kept all those 10 things.
But then you think minimalism's bad, you know, because look at this pain it's caused me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Another challenge with minimalism is if you have kids and a lot going on in your life, I mean, minimalism is definitely going to be harder, especially as kids grow up. Like they just change size clothing. They need bigger bicycles and their toys become different over time. And their learning implements and all that sort of business. So it's almost inevitable that when you have kids, you'll have a lot of stuff in your house because, yeah, unlike us fully grown adults, like kids are ever changing, like they're growing.
Yeah. But I suppose you can make an effort to counteract that by like, okay, little Johnny's outgrown these clothes, let's give them away or let's like donate them or whatever. Like try and do that over time as soon as it's kind of happening. Okay, kids aren't playing with these anymore, let's give them away or whatever, rather than just kind of leaving them there and piling them up. Like it would just be easier if you do it a little bit at a time when you notice it happening in real time rather than waiting until later. And then it's like, oh, so much. Let's just put it in that room. Let's just put it in the garage or whatever.
Yeah. Just put it away.
Yeah. Out of sight.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
And of course, it can be kind of challenging to implement minimalism in your household, especially if your partner doesn't agree or your kids don't really agree and they don't really want to get rid of things, which could be pretty hard to navigate. But you have to try and meet in the middle, I suppose.
Yeah, you can meet in the middle and see if you can come to some sort of happy medium, I guess. Or you can show them by doing it personally and maybe they'll enjoy it. Like you could do it with maybe a room that's not used very much that you use, or a little area of the house that you do it with, and the others in the house might be like, oh, that actually looks pretty nice. Like they enjoy the space more when there's like less stuff everywhere. So it's possible you can influence them that way as well by like leading by example.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. What are some misconceptions about minimalism?
You don't get to own nice things, Dave. You have to give away as much as possible and only focus on having less and less and less until you have nothing at all.
Is that the goal? Maybe that's the goal people assume. Like the goal is to get to zero possessions.
I think, as I said earlier in the episode, context is kind of important here. We're not coming from a position of extreme poverty and having nothing and starting with zero. We're sort of starting from a position of extreme wealth and a lot of possessions and having a lot. And so when we say minimalism, it's kind of just about dragging that extreme state of living back to something more reasonable.
Slightly back towards the center,
yeah. We probably still, even after doing this, will have a lot more than we need.
Oh, yeah. So the other misconception, I think, is that minimalism is probably like boring and mundane. Like you don't get to, I don't know, like there's this thing. It's because you kind of mentioned it before, like maybe the misconception or the misassumption is that it's about focusing on less rather than the other side of it, which is like focusing on the time and the money and the resources and whatever that you freed up so that you can focus all that stuff elsewhere on the stuff that you enjoy most. So how could it be then less fun and boring at the same time? Like that doesn't really make sense when you flesh it out, because you're forgetting about the other side of it.
Yeah. It's not to, again, have as little as possible then sit cross-legged in the middle of a room and stare at each other. That's not what we're talking about here. It's also another misconception is you can't have sentimental items, which is, of course, not true. We can definitely have sentimental items. You choose which items. And then we just discard the other stuff, which is collecting dust, taking up space. Or we kind of try and focus in on the sentimental items that actually mean a lot to us. And we're not just collecting hordes of sentimental items, which kind of loses its value if we have too many of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of prioritizing again, isn't it?
Prioritizing again, because if you have 500 of something, then each individual thing kind of loses its meaning.
Yeah, I suppose a core part of this is recognizing that everything in your life doesn't have equal value. So it's about trying to figure out which ones have the most and bring you the most fulfillment or joy or whatever on a regular basis, and focusing on those. And kind of mentally, I guess, calculating the ones that don't and then trying to remove those from your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the last misconception that we can think of is that, it's probably not possible if you have kids. But that's not really true. I mean, if your kid doesn't have 400 toys, it's not like you're depriving them of an enjoyable childhood. I mean, you don't have to give them nothing. It's not about that either. It's about that balance in the middle where you're kind of questioning and you're trying to find that middle ground again where you get all of the benefits without the downsides of the excess.
Yeah. And you're kind of also teaching them to sort of value what they have as well and not just treat it as something they can throw away because they're going to get something new. And trying to not get them in that mindset of that throwaway culture.
Yeah. Because you're influencing them at that young age. So you really don't want them to think that that's normal, because then they'll grow up thinking that that's natural behavior, that we just buy something and use it for a short time and then it throws away and we buy another thing. I think you want to teach them the opposite of that.
Yeah. And of course, kids grow up and their needs change and what you're trying to teach them through toys changes. So we're not saying that you don't replace them as they grow older. You know, they're not going to be playing with the same color set they had when they're three, when they're 15. We're not trying to say that, but it's just sort of not having loads and loads of plastic junk that they play with for an afternoon and then you get them a new thing 2 days later.
Sorry, mate, you can't have an iPad. Here's this little toy car. Why don't you play with that anymore? It's not about that.
No, it's not about that at all.
All right, so you want to share a little bit of our experience with minimalism, mate? Have we actively done some of this stuff in the past and how have we found it? And let's talk about that a bit.
Yeah, I think personally, maybe not so much now, though still a little bit now, but especially when I was living in Sydney and I was working like a lot, I made a conscious effort to live in small spaces because I didn't want the burden of taking care of large spaces or filling up large spaces. And what that personally meant for me was, you know, share housing for a long time or living in that one bed apartment and making that work, because that naturally led to a state where I couldn't bring lots of stuff into my life. It naturally led to a state where it's like, I can't buy this stuff. I have nowhere to put it.
Yep. So, and that helped you.
That helped me, yeah.
Yeah. So that's like a forced savings, like a mortgage.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like forced space savings.
Forced space savings, yes. It was. So I did that for many, many years. I just brought up the example of my phone. I try not to replace my phone very often because, again, it's just very wasteful. It's unnecessary. And phones work fine.
So I asked you a question. When you said you try not to replace your phone, do you actively try to resist buying a new phone, or do you just keep using your phone until it like doesn't work anymore, until it's like so frustrating you and then you're like, oh, okay, I'll get another one. Which one is it? Are you actively fighting against it, or?
Look, I've broken phone screens in the past and that's sometimes led me to be like, oh, it's not worth fixing this screen. I'll just get a new one. That happened often. I'm not actively every day fighting the urge to get a new phone. No, I'm not like, oh, I just can't. I can't hit that buy now button. No, it's not like that at all. Though I am a tech head and I like keeping up with tech news and I like hearing about the latest technology, I then just don't take that next step every time and think I need to own the latest technology all the time. So to answer your question, it's not an active fight daily to avoid buying a new phone. And yeah, like I said before, if I buy a new piece of clothing, I try and think, well, I was perfectly fine for the last 2 years without this new piece of clothing. What is this piece of clothing replacing that I used to wear? Is there something that I don't like wearing anymore? Is this like filling the same purpose that something else was filling? And I try and get rid of clothing if I'm buying new clothing.
Not just increasing the diversification in your clothing portfolio, mate.
I try not to. Look, when I first moved out of home and I had like a big closet, yeah, it was just like increasing. And then I moved and I'm like, this is a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And eventually I got smart to it and I'm like, okay, I can't just keep accumulating clothing because it just gets out of hand very quickly. And like you said, buying high quality stuff and using it and enjoying it and stuff that'll last, I think that's important too.
So I suppose I've kind of always been attracted to the idea of minimalism because I might have mentioned this earlier, but I don't enjoy like bringing more possessions into our house that like doesn't feel good. It actually feels like, oh, great, now we have more stuff. Like I think it has like a negative connotation for me. So I have this weird like almost like a sick pleasure of like getting rid of stuff because it just feels like better. It just feels because you're simplifying things then, you know, so it actually feels better because we already have more than enough. So that kind of feels nice for me. And in terms of buying stuff, yeah, I pretty much take the approach of not buying things unless I need them, unless I've, you know, maybe thought about like, yeah, okay, I need such and such, whatever, then I'll just go and buy it. And then I will kind of look around every now and then, look around the house or look in, you know, my closet or whatever and be like, oh, okay, I don't really need this anymore. Let's get rid of that. So, yeah, I suppose it's almost like and even like maybe how I spend my time as well. I always like to question myself of what I'm doing and why and if it still makes sense and if I could be doing things a bit better or like if I'm spending my money and my time and whatever, my focus in areas that matter the most, or if I can kind of tweak things and get, you know, the same kind of life benefits and what I want from refocusing elsewhere. So I've kind of embraced these kind of principles for a long time, I guess, in various ways.
Yeah. On that note, I love being able to open a drawer or a closet and not have to rustle around through it. Like I can see everything that I have in there when I open it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks nicer.
It looks nicer. You get to what you need quicker. As soon as you have to rustle through things to find other things, that drives me nuts.
I don't have the patience for that. Like if I can't find something in like 5 seconds, like I'm not doing it. I'll just do something else. I don't want it.
Yep. I agree, man.
All right, let's wrap this one up, mate.
Yeah.
Let's give us some conclusions on minimalism.
So the way Dave and I think about this is it's not about buying nothing or throwing out all of your possessions to live in a cave. It's about questioning and simplifying things and focusing on what actually brings value. So you want to make sure what's in your life is really worth keeping. Otherwise, it's a burden to own, burden to maintain, replace, clean, manage, or whatever other burden these items bring into your life.
So basically, I think you might have mentioned this, Pat, but basically if there's a lot of clutter around your house, it probably means you're buying a bunch of shit that you don't really need. That's a pretty good indicator of that, what's happening there. So you could even like have a look around and see if there's some items that you could sell. We've done a bit of this at the moment, actually, and it looks like we'll probably make about $1,000, which is pretty handy cash from selling various things that were lying around the house, I guess. So, yeah, we're pretty happy about that. It was like some obvious ones are like electronics. You've got old phones in a drawer, man. Almost everyone has like old phones sitting in a drawer somewhere, and they're still like often worth like multiple $100s.
Yep. So whether it's extra clothes, items in your house, your schedule, your finance, I think you could really benefit from practicing a little bit of minimalism, removing some of those things from your life and just simplifying it. There's no fixed rules about what you can and can't do or a destination to reach. It's all just about approaching life with this mindset and really reaping the benefits.
So those benefits are lower expenses, less clutter, more free time, more peace of mind, and also mental energy for other things in your life. And as you can imagine, this fits perfectly with our goal of financial independence. All of those things really, really jive with us, mate. They really embody financial independence. I think they really fit really well together.
Oh, yeah. Match made in heaven. You know. Minimalism and fire should just get married. Like, they're perfect for each other.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode on minimalism. If you did, we'd love it if you could leave us a review in your podcast app or share this show with a friend. As we said, this episode idea came from a listener. So if you have a topic that you want us to discuss, you can send us a quick message at fireandchillpod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.